Well, tonight we're going to discuss the 91st Psalm, which is called the Psalm of Protection, and how important it is to us. But first of all, I've been asked to tell a joke. So I'm getting that over first for these kids, but the rest of the talk is very serious. Well, this man was on that program, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? You have it over here, don't you? And the questioner asked him, which bird sleeps outside its own nest? He said, is it a robin or a blackbird or a thrush or a cuckoo? So the man sat and thought, and he couldn't come up with the answer. The man told him, well, you're allowed one phone call. So he called his pal, and he asked him, which bird sleeps outside its own nest? His friend says, that's easy, it's a cuckoo. So he said, it's a cuckoo. Well, they said, congratulations, you've just won $500,000. He thought that was fantastic, and he went along afterwards to see his friend and thank him. He said, how did you know that? He said, I would never have guessed that. He said, sure, anybody knows that a cuckoo lives in a clock. So that's my only joke. The rest of the stuff is a lot more serious. I brought along an article which I bring everywhere with me by Bicknell Young. It's called Aggressive Mental Suggestion. And I'm going to read you the first bit of it. When Mr. Kimball came on the platform the first day, at the time I studied, he said something like this. If I seem to manifest some physical discord, and he seemed to, it's because many people believe that I am in error. He said many persons had wanted to be in class and had not been permitted, and they believed him to be in great error. Would that mean that what those persons were believing had produced the physical error? No. But it did seem that the belief entertained by a great many people seemingly was disturbing his thinking. Until his disturbed thinking about what they were thinking was being objectified as physical discord. Now, what needed to be treated? Their belief or anybody's belief that he was an error? He was not an error and did not believe that he was. You would have denied that belief and seen that it was untrue. Would that have been sufficient? No. But the beliefs that were being entertained by a great many people that he was an error claimed that they could disturb and harass him or make him or anybody believe in what they were thinking. What needed to be treated? Not simply that he was an error, but the claim that this belief that he was an error could disturb and harass him or make him believe in what they were thinking or fear what they were doing, or in any way hinder him or affect his thinking. This was the claim, that what they were thinking could have some effect upon him, and thereby his own thinking be externalized. Now, I'm reading you that because it would seem that I have a claim to meet tonight, and I know that it was mental malpractice. And I'm working to know that it's not what people are thinking, but what I think about what they're thinking that does the harm. A few years ago, I was asked to speak at Chautauqua. I'm sure you've all heard of Chautauqua. And I was speaking to an audience of 700 people who were all non-Christian scientists. Among the audience were doctors, physicians, surgeons, ministers, rabbis, everything. It was such a mixture. Well, before this talk, about a month before it, I went down with quite a big physical problem on one of my legs, and I couldn't walk or get around, and it looked like I wouldn't be able to come to America at all. But I was determined that I was going, that mortal mind wasn't going to stop me. When I got to New York, and I was staying with a friend, and This man who's here tonight, Paul Condillis, and I were making a tape. He had hired a studio for the day, and my friend said she would drive me into his studio. And I was being sick all the way. I was in such physical pain. And my friend was having to stop the car. When I got to the studio, Paul wasn't feeling too good. And we were recording a talk that we never rehearsed. And neither one of us had a clue of what we were going to say. And we went up into this tiny little studio. And it was 110 degrees. It was so hot. And it was amazing that as soon as I started to talk, the talk was on terrorism. Do you remember it was for Atlanta? As soon as I started to talk, I saw Paul's face change. And I just saw him lift, and that completely lifted me. And after that, we were able to go out and have lunch. But I was still having a lot of pain with this leg. So the next day we were heading off for Chautauqua, and we had to drive 500 miles. And when we got to Chautauqua, I was awake all night with the pain. And I found out that I had to stand up. It was an outdoor lecture, and I had to stand the whole time. And I didn't know how on earth I was going to do it, but I was determined to do it. And I went out and began the talk. And everybody listened very attentively. But at the end of that talk, a minister stood up and he said, "I have a question for you." He said, "What about all the children that die in Christian Science?" He said, "My friend is in the insurance business." And he said, "He has had to deal with some of these cases, children who've died of diabetes. And how can you explain that?" Well, that was quite a question to throw at me. And I prayed for a few minutes, and then I said, "Well, supposing a group of amateur actors put on a play of Shakespeare, would you blame Shakespeare if it was a flop?" And he said, "No, I wouldn't." And I said, "Well, you can't blame us, because we're trying to be like the Master. We're trying to be Christ-like, but we're not him, just like we're not Shakespeare. We're doing the best we know how." And I said, "After all, the medical profession have made a lot of mistakes, and there's not as much fuss about that as there is if it happens to a Christian Scientist." So I said, "Does that answer your question?" And I got a standing ovation. And I went out and shook hands with my audience and wasn't even aware of the foot or leg. It was completely healed. I had been getting some good support during that time. And the same sort of thing happened to me coming over here. And it was telling me there was no way that I could come. But here I am. So that's why we need a psalm of protection. We need to be aware that animal magnetism or mental malpractice is something. I hear so many people say, "Well, if God is all in all, animal magnetism is nothing." But I remember our teacher telling us when we had class, treat it like it's real. Treat it like it really is something, because only in that way are you going to protect yourself. And some years ago, many years ago, when I was a new student of Christian Science, a Christian Science teacher in Ireland told me that I needed to study the 91st Psalm and repeat it every day. She said, "You need protection." And I tried to be obedient to her. I read it every day. But it's only in recent years that I really begin to understand it. Now it says, "He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty." Now, to dwell means to abide as a resident, to live in a place, reside. So we're going to dwell in the secret place of the Most High and not dwell on our problem. That's what we need to do. And secret means hidden from others, revealed to no one or to few, beyond ordinary comprehension, constructed so as to escape observation. So where is the secret place of the Most High? That is the place that God knows. That's where He knows you as you really are. He knows me as I really am. He knows the whole universe as it really is. And that's the secret place. So we have to dwell, first of all, in the secret place. The Amplified Bible tells us that all the promises in this lovely psalm will only happen if we obey the first two verses. First of all, you have to dwell in the secret place. And how many of us dwell on our problems? Look how much time we spend dwelling on our problem. Well, I'm going to tell you a few things that happened to me many years ago that none of you have ever heard about before. And I'm telling you these things not for you to be sorry for me, not to shock you, but I want to show to you the way that God has kept the promises in this psalm to me personally, when He gives angels charge over me to keep me in all my ways. When I was a young woman, my friend and I had two boyfriends. And her boyfriend was a friend of my boyfriend, which was why I went out with him. But I didn't really like him. I went with him for quite some time. And we experimented with sex, being young people. And I finally saw that this relationship wasn't right and it wasn't going any place. So I finished the relationship. And when I had finished the relationship, about 3 months later, I found that I was pregnant, was having a baby. In that time, that was a terrible disgrace. My mother was very religious. She was a Presbyterian. And she beat me when she found out. My mother used to beat me quite a lot. And she beat me when she found out that I was having this baby and said that I had disgraced my family. My two brothers stopped speaking to me. They were so hurt. I didn't know what to do. I didn't have any money and didn't know where to go. And this was a very difficult time. And on the night that my child was born, I told my sister I thought it was time for me to go into the hospital. And she said she would come with me. And my mother said to me, "You're going to suffer tonight for your sins." And I really felt that I was a terrible sinner and that I was in disgrace and had disgraced my family. I had a little boy whom I named David, whom I loved very much.